I was going to say, too, I really appreciate what you had to say. I think that was very revealing, very true, you know, realizing even going to another country that speaks your own language, you think like Australia, we did in Australia, you'd think that you could fit into that culture. And when you get there, you find out this is not home. And you do have to fit in. One anecdote I might add is we found out very quickly that the term piddling around meant something different here than it did there. And that was noted. But anyway, thank you very much.
Did you really want me to look at this language deal? Okay. Language, you know, part of knowing people is learning to master their language. That's part of knowing it. And so if you try hard, I guarantee you're going to be rewarded. But what I think is important is, and something that's new to me, so I'm not speaking from experience here, but something that's new to me, and I've read it many, many times since I learned it, and that is studying the science of linguistics. And that is not the study of a particular language, it's the study of the foundation principles of language as a human trait. So linguistics will lay the study of linguistics will lay a foundation on which you can master any language. So I would suggest that it would be a good idea for a man going to the field, if he's going to a place where their English is not the official language, or if it's not the commonly spoken language, he should probably study linguistics before he goes. By the way, I was reading there is a, and I haven't had time to research it here, but maybe some of you would know, there is supposed to be a wonderful linguistic school, one of the greatest in the States right now, in Norman, for the Wycliffe missionaries who are Bible translators. So it's possible that you could investigate that and find out more about studying linguistics, you know, right here in Oklahoma. Now, some things that are aids to language mastery. First of all, self-discipline. It's very tough to keep yourself going in studying a language when you're failing, it seems like, when you can't communicate like you hoped you would, when in 3 weeks you can't preach and do all that in the language you're studying. But you have to just keep going, because you're going to succeed eventually. You know, there are some people that I never thought would learn language that I've seen learn it. Opportunities for study. Most mission organizations, denominational mission organizations, require that missionaries devote the first year of their residence in the country to language study alone, no other responsibilities. And if at the end of that year they haven't sufficiently mastered the language, and I'm not talking about complete fluency, but sufficient mastering of the language, they're sent home. They're that serious about it. Because these people are committed to mission work for life, most of them, and they've got to be able to communicate with people on a one-to-one basis. So I think we need to be thinking about providing opportunities for language study as well. We need to talk about the constant use of language in everyday situations, which means immersing ourselves in the culture through social contact. You have to get out and just put yourself in situations where you're forced to speak the language. And that is probably the most effective tool right there, learning the language, because you're learning it in vernacular, which is the spoken language of the people. There are a lot of other things, but anyway, I just put those aside.
Greg, you had a real good presentation. There are several things I'd like to talk about, but I won't take the time. You mentioned that we're having trouble with our mission work, not because of the trouble on the mission field, but for other reasons. And I think you're probably right. But we are having trouble. We've got a lot of missionaries in the field right now that we don't have full support for them. And the churches that are underwriting them are having to put out large amounts. And your talks like yours, of course, I think helps a lot, but would you address that?
Okay.
Just, do you have any ideas on it?
Yeah, I think it's your fault, Bill, because you stayed in Malawi too long. Everybody forgot you were over there. They didn't even forgot we even had to work.
When I was there, I didn't have any trouble getting support.
Yeah. No, I think what you're talking about, I think what I what I'm seeing, and it's from my past experience again, is that we don't talk about missionary work, really. How many congregations do you hear regular emphasis on mission work taught and preached? And listen, when we start preaching, you know, people that ride hobbies, sometimes you think they're pretty bad, but you know, you always know what their hobby is, don't you? You never forget that. You know what they're going to talk about when you see them come. And so many times we ought to make mission work and work, not, and I'm not talking about mission work as a foreign work necessarily, but mission work wherever we are. In the States, we can do mission work. And if we don't talk about it and preach about it and educate congregations about it so that our children are growing up hearing it all the time, and then we do something about it by acting on what we're preaching, if we don't do that, I think we are going to get in a situation like right now where people say, well, let's just give it up, you know, some people. And I think education really has a lot to do with it. I just don't know whether we're talking about it or not.
There's a question that I'm constantly asked about missionaries, and I've tried to address it over the years, and I was asked just last week this very question, why can't those people over there stand on their own? We've been in Malawi, for example, for 30 or 40 years. Why can't they stand on their own? They can't stand on their own for the same reason we don't stand on our own over here. We've got hundreds of preachers over here with 400 or 500 churches. We've got 800 in Malawi with one missionary over there. Mm-hmm. And yet we expect them to do what we can't do at all, you see. They can't do it for, they can do the work, but they don't have the finances or the know-how. And that's the reason that we have to be there, meet them.
Yeah. There's a lot of things. You know, third world countries, people that say that usually don't understand about what's happening in third world countries. They don't have exchangeable currency like the dollar. The dollar is exchangeable worldwide. Everybody wants it. And everybody in these countries wants it for one reason, because they can get things in other places with it. Now, we're not talking about things like cars and things like that, although they do want those things. But not some of the Christians, but a lot of the people in the country. But we're talking about things like grape juice for the Lord's Supper. If we did not have a presence or some representation there, those people couldn't even get their grape juice for the Lord's Supper because it has to be bought with foreign currency, and they can't get it. So, you know, these are some of the reasons, but, you know, not every situation is alike. You have to judge the environment and the situation according to where it is and how it's developing. Another thing I've thought about, Bill, in relation to that same statement. You know, we are talking about not only congregations in America who are not standing on their own after how many 50 years or whatever. We're talking about congregations in America that are not doing that. We're talking about a history of more than 300 or 400 years of a so-called Christian presence in our nation. And we have had people that have come out from, we are receiving people from our culture into the church, and really they don't have to make any changes. You know, they've been living a pretty good moral life, and they just kind of ease into the church, and there may be a few things they have to alter in their life, but basically they're what we would quote-unquote call Christian. But we're not talking about that in foreign countries. We're talking about people who are coming from idolatry, many of them. First-generation Christians, how many of you have come from idolatry into Christ? You know, no hands go up. Well, we're not talking about a heritage of Christianity in many of these countries. We're talking, but in the United States, we are. So people are expecting these countries, which have a heritage of idolatry and paganism and many other things, to be grown up like we are when we're really not grown up as we should be. And they're coming from a completely different background than we've come from. So,
let me make one or two more comments and I'll be through. A good motive for sending a man to Africa is not to get him out of your hair over here. Alan Bonifay, the only other person that I know that he worked with in Africa was me.
That's it. Well, I was thinking because I said yes.
Greg, I want to read a few statistics on the mission work, and you're welcome to comment on it. You know, I guess you say you can prove anything by statistics, but I think it may be pretty accurate. It's estimated that there are 50,000 missionaries in the world, and out of the 50,000 that are in the world, it is estimated that the Churches of Christ have 413 on mission fields. Out of that 413, when we include what we believe we are, the truth, we're looking at 5 or 6. Now, what that means basically is 94% of our preachers are ministering to 90% of the world's population, while 6% are working with 91% of the world's population. It's also estimated that as high as 85% of all the members of the Church of Christ are bottled up in 8 states in the United States. You know, you look at us and you look at the numbers of churches that we have in America, and the states with the most churches are California, Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, and perhaps a few others. But the majority of our work in some ways is there, or at least a large percentage of it. It's also estimated that 96% of church funds are used to bring the gospel of Christ to 9% of the world's population here who speak English, while 4% of church funds are used to take the gospel to 91% of the world. What can we do to change those statistics a little bit to get, you know, a little bit better balance there? What would you suggest?
Well, that's a big order there. I would suggest, first of all, like I was saying, that we get the proper motives in our mind, first of all, for doing the work. You know, let's start making sure that we have men in the work who are willing to do the work and who are going for the proper motive, and then we're going to get a more positive outlook in people's minds about missionary work. But number two, I think we're going to have to change the minds of a lot of preachers so that they'll be willing to go. You know, it was amazing to me when my wife and I, and we didn't consider this a big deal, when my wife and I moved to North Dakota, which is still part of the United States, although some think it's not. We moved to North Dakota, and I had a preacher come to me and tell me, "Hoo-wee, you've done your time." You know, I mean, that's the kind of outlook a lot of people have on preaching the gospel, even in the United States. They're not willing to move away from their home little territory to go out somewhere and preach the gospel. So I think that's got to change one thing. But number two, a lot of old money needs to be freed up for the cause of Christ.
Amen.
We've got a lot of old money sitting around in our brotherhood just waiting for some good building project or some good new carpet or new benches or whatever. Or get down to $30,000, say, "Well, brethren, we've got to be careful. We're getting down close to $30,000 now, you know." Got to be careful. And there are other congregations that are spending down to nothing every month, sacrificing to spread the gospel. We got to change that relationship for one thing. And, you know, people complain about the idea of money, but listen, it's not our money. It's for the Lord's work.
Amen.
So, anyway, that kind of thing, those are just a couple of suggestions. I think if we can change people's minds about going and change people's minds about spending and sending, then I think we'll be, you know, and get them educated about mission work and the proper motives in mind, then we'll be on the road to change. So
it would seem to me also that we need to quit being selfish. Sometimes we have the idea that if we want to do a work, we want to bring a preacher into our neighborhood, in our backyard, and we don't want to spend our money elsewhere. We want our money spent right here where we can see results. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to think of the church sometimes, and not completely, but sometimes in the way that we do business. If we were in the business of fishing, and we knew there's a pond over here where we can catch one fish, and we know there's a pond over here where we can catch 10 fish, if we're a wise businessman, which one would we pick?
Depends on the price of gas.
Alan Bumps.
Bill, I like you. If it hadn't been for Bill, there's no telling how big a mess I would have made of things.
We know we're still cleaning up.
I know. I know. Just be thankful for Bill. Appreciated your talk, Greg. I thought it was excellent. And I think one thing that ought to be done We have enough men in this room here tonight, a lot of experience in mission work. It seems to me like we ought to start talking about this at the preacher study. We ought to have a subject like this once a year so that people will keep the thing in front of them and be interested. That letter that Jim Franklin sent here, if you haven't read it, get a copy of it and read that. He's doing a masterful work in Malawi, recovering a terrible problem there, and he's making great progress. Since he's been there, he's had 1,200 confessions. There have been 300 baptisms. He's preached to 25,000 people. And the split there is healing, and things are coming along. It's a great work. You need to read that letter. You need to get behind the work he's doing there. You need to get behind the work all these men are doing. They're making great sacrifices for the cause of Christ, and they need to be supported and backed. You know, sometimes people say, are those folks really converted? I mean, really now, are they true Christians? That just goes all over me when people say that. I'm sorry, it really does. Some of the finest Christians I know in the world are Wixon Zulequa and Stephen Kasinda. These are great men for the cause of Jesus Christ. Wixon's Jimmy's translator and over there in Zimbabwe. He's one of the most honest men I ever met anywhere. Faithful man, faithful man. If he misplaces one penny, it'll show up in 33 places. He's got so many records. He's an honest man. And he's a great preacher of the gospel and a hard worker. And we have a lot of people like that. Let me tell you a place. In 1973, Dennis and Ron visited some churches on a tea plantations in eastern Zimbabwe. That became one of the hottest places in the war in Zimbabwe. We had brethren who were shot to death there because they continued to work for the Europeans that owned those tea plantations during the guerrilla warfare in Zimbabwe. That was the last time any of our preachers were able to visit there for 10 years. 10 years was the last time when Dennis and Ron went there. That's an interesting trip. You might ask them about it. But anyhow, in 1983, Wixon and I went back there at their invitation. They had written letters to us over the years a few times. The work was reduced. We didn't have three congregations anymore. We had one. And there were some problems in it. But those people, through all of that war and suffering, intended to be in our fellowship and work with us. They never saw one preacher. They never had any help of any kind. And 6 months before that, they had rejected an approach by the Christian church who were willing to put money behind their approach. They rejected it because they were in our fellowship. Those people were converted to the cause of Christ that we preach. And they love the truth. And you know, all of this trouble we've had in Malawi, I was talking to some of the guys before services. To you, it doesn't mean a whole lot. I mean, you say, boy, that's a shame. It's a great sorrow that that's all happened. If somebody tells me about a Christian who's been in a car wreck in Florida, I've never been to Florida. I don't know if I know any Christians in Florida. I think, that's awful. If somebody tells me that Bill Davis, whom I love very much, has been in a car wreck, it is heartbreaking to me. Because I know him. We know Christians in Malawi who have suffered terribly, terribly, because of a heretic who has divided the Church of Jesus Christ. And it breaks our heart. There's people, Jimmy told me tonight, there are people who have left the church over this. They don't know Jesus Christ anymore. We love these people. And you need to learn to love them too. And I know you can't all go over there. But we've got to get behind our people that are willing to go. We've got to take these principles this man taught tonight We've got to study them. We've got to learn them. We've got to apply them. We've got to get ready to go, and we've got to go. We've got opportunities. Ronnie mentioned the other day the third world countries are opening up. And in spite of our troubles, we're growing and spreading in Africa right now. Right now. 10 years ago, we went to Zambia. We've got a great work there. It just spread up into the Copper Belt not too long ago. They'll be going into Zaire before long. And the countries are going to come. Brethren, we have got to get ready to go. And Africa's not the only place people have labored through hard troubles. Wayne McCamey here has worked through terribly difficult problems in Mexico over the years and has done a great work. Merle Helwig started to work in Honduras. We didn't have anything in Honduras when he went to Honduras. And he worked and built it up for years and years and years. And we have great missionaries laboring there. A brother visited Australia in a work situation and got the situation stirred up, and Jerry Cutter went over there and started the church, and we've had missionaries there since. People will accept the gospel of Jesus Christ, and we have got the money. The money is not the problem. It is not the problem. We got enough money in our pockets here tonight and in our bank accounts to do an incredible amount. We need to do it. We need to quit talking about it. People need the gospel of Jesus Christ. And these people are converted. Now don't misunderstand. We have people in those countries who are not devoted to the truth and who fall away and who are not good people. We got people like that here in America too. And we've got people there that love the cause of Jesus Christ. Bill knows people in Malawi who are third generation Christians. That's how converted they are. Maybe fourth by now, I don't know. There are people in Malawi, when I would visit there, who knew Paul Nichols, who knew him. And who still believe the things he taught from then. Or 40 years down the line. Now we can do great things. We've done great things with about a handful of congregations and a handful of people and a few warm bodies who were willing to go. We can do more if we take these principles and do what we can do. That's all God asks. But He not only asks it, He demands it. And if Jesus Christ comes back here and there are bank accounts in our churches with thousands and thousands of dollars, people will perish and burn in hell because of it. We need to take the gospel. I'm sorry, Greg.
Amen. This is, it's hard to talk after somebody gives a really emotional spiel. You brethren have been doing that all evening. I told Jim that if this went on much longer, well, all the preachers were going to go overseas here in a little bit. But, I think that the reason there's not enough money that's being put out for overseas work is what you mentioned, Greg, ignorance of the work. We need to be educated about it. And I think that the preachers that are working overseas should, when they come back to the United States, their supporting congregation should arrange some tours for them. Now, I know you guys are coming home and you want to visit with family and you want to go to meetings and things that like this and the New Year's meeting. Your stay just needs to be extended long enough till you can make some tours and visit lots of congregations. It could be arranged where you would be visiting maybe a different three or four different churches a week, and not only talk with folks, but maybe even bring back slides and give a slide presentation. You know, I like to see some of those churches see the people that are standing out there that you've baptized and say, this is the church at such and such a village, and over here's another church, and here are some of the leaders of the churches. I think that type of sales job will cause folks in congregations that right now are not supporting mission work in foreign countries to dig deep into their pockets and say, hey, we want to be a part of this.
I agree, Richard. I think that we're spoiled to death, okay? And I don't believe that we ought to do so much comparing with the denominations and what they do that we lose sight of what the truth is, but in regard to their missionaries, when their missionaries come back, it's their responsibility. It's no question. There's no option about it. Their responsibility is to go and visit the churches that are supporting them. Now, they provide them with whatever they need to go and do that. It's expensive to travel. So they provide them with that money or whatever they need to do to go and visit them. But they're responsible to go and visit. And they actually used to phrase it furlough, but now they say stateside assignment, because they want people to understand these guys are coming over here to do some more work, deputation work, where they can go out and raise their support or whatever. So maybe it's about time we started doing some things like that. There's nothing unbiblical about that, visiting the churches that are supporting.
I'd like to say a word or two about individuals and congregations who are interested in supporting Africa. Now, there's been some trouble over there, and there's a faction of people that are functioning as the church, and they're getting support from America, either from individuals or from congregations. And I say that simply to point out, if you're supporting someone over there, you know a congregation is supporting someone over there, you need to check out who you're supporting and make sure that they're not a part of a heresy.
I think Maurice checked.
Certainly do appreciate what you've said, especially what Alan said. I'm not much of a question person, but since Little Rock has become involved in the African work, of course, this is pretty important to us. And I think one of the most important things, that, especially from our standpoint, is this congregational education. I think that's one of the things that we all need. We needed it, and we still need it.
Yeah.
And because some things can come down on you that are just mind-boggling, we're waiting for it. Things were pretty difficult when we got there, and I might say that Jim, as that letter, report says, he's doing a great work. It's turning around. And one of the things I think the Brotherhood needs to know is that he loves what he's doing. And so when you have all those combinations, we've got Satan on the right.
Yeah. You know, I talked to Jim just the night before we came back, and of course, probably more people have talked to him since then, but he was telling me that for the past 5 months, I think he's had 2 days where he hasn't preached somewhere at that time. And it's as a result of going out and doing that that the work has turned around. People see that that those who are practicing sin and who are involved in heresy, they are being defeated by the cause of right, you know. And we can't be ashamed of that. And I think Jim is really doing a wonderful work over there. I agree wholeheartedly. He's putting everything he's got into it.
Greg, in the early days of the church, in the book of Acts, for example, a lot of the mission work was done by just Christians who were scattered abroad and went everywhere preaching the word. And many of the churches, probably even a majority in this country, were established the same way. And a good deal of the mission work overseas is done that way too. And yet all we've talked about tonight has been what might be called that done by professional missionaries. Would you speak to that other side?
Sure. You know, one of the things I mentioned in the idea of teamwork is the idea of vocational, what I would term and what others term vocational missionaries. People who are willing to seek a job in another location for the purpose of doing missionary work. There are a lot of teams going out right now among denominations and also among the churches of Christ that use multiple cups. And what they're doing is they're planning as much as 5 or 6 years ahead to go to an area. They're doing a lot of investigation about vocational opportunities in that area, and they will have 1 or 2 full-time preaching missionaries who go with them. But there are several families that form a core group, and they all go there, and immediately they can start worshiping as the church. Immediately they've got a broader base of contact with people in the area, and immediately they're learning the language. They're just immersing themselves in the culture immediately. And I can't look, I don't like to look at denominations and say, look at the success they're having, because I think the way to destruction is broad, and they're going to have a lot of success. But the principles involved, I think, are sound. I think if we have people who are devoted enough to say, look, if we go, let's say, to Eastern Europe, and we can see that in Eastern Europe there are job opportunities that where I could be working. Now, maybe I won't make $50,000 a year. Maybe I'll make $20,000 a year. Maybe I'll have to really take a heavy cut in pay. Okay? But I can go there and work, and I can live. I won't die. I'll go and live and work and be a part of the Lord's mission in that area. And I think that's a very important part of mission work that we have neglected. Another thing is, as I pointed out, is mission work starts at home. It doesn't start on the field. If you're not, if the congregation is not involved in spreading the gospel to its own community and then outside of that community, with view to outside of that community, they don't have that kind of spirit. You won't find people that will be willing to do that. Right now in California, for instance, the church in Auburn has set a goal for itself to try to start a new congregation every 5 years. Well, like Brother Raymond Fox preaches, that might not be the Lord's limit on it. It might be a new one every year, what he wants, and what he will do. But that's the kind of spirit they have. And you know what they had? Let me just give this, give you this information, and it may inspire you to do the same. They had a big bunch of money designated for a building fund. You know, they don't have a building. They've been meeting in a rented building for 15 years. And they're still there. It's amazing. They've been meeting in a rented building for 15 years, and they're still worshiping. Still faithful. Isn't that amazing? So they took all that money from that building fund, and they said, we're not going to use it for a building fund. We can do one of two things. We can use it for a building, or we can start a new congregation in another city nearby. And that now is where Brother Glenn Osborne and Brother Carmen Briggs are working, in a new congregation. And some of the families that were there have not just decided, well, we'll drive from Auburn to this place to meet. They've moved there, got new jobs there, and they're working there, and they did it for one reason, to build a new congregation in that place. So I think it's being done, and it's possible. But I think, first of all, we're going to have to get people with the kind of motives in their mind to think about doing that. So think about foreign employment possibilities. It's not always possible in other places, in some countries, I mean, but you need to think about it. And if there's an opportunity and we can plan ahead, there are so many places where we do not have a presence. The truth does not have a presence, and we need to be going to those places in groups like that. So I don't know if that addressed what you were talking about, James, but that's some thoughts that I had about it.
Well, part of it, at least, Priscilla McQuillo moved up and down that train to coach.
Yeah, they sure did.
And made tents and preached. And I don't think we have to go in groups. Still preached in a lot of cities. There's no education to anybody with it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say a hearty amen, of course, to what you've said, and I hope this is only the beginning. There are so many things that flood my mind tonight. They flooded my mind as you spoke and as Alan did, and as some other ideas have come up. But I hope we can proceed from here and be concrete in our plans for the future and not let it stop with an emotional high. We've considered, when we were considering the Eastern European work, we knew we would have to have people who would go and work because it's too expensive to send 8-10 people and support them in a mission field like that. Other countries are now much more expensive to live in than the United States is, and that's a new thing for us here. So that was a consideration. I had a word for the preachers here. And I'm sure there are some of you who, as Alan was speaking, and even as Greg was speaking, were saying, I'm ready to go. And that's an emotional feeling. It needs to go beyond that. And if you are sincere in that, my advice is to begin prepare now. You may not go for 5 years, but don't wait until 6 months before you're ready to go into a field to begin preparation to be a missionary. There is no sin in long-range planning, and it looks sometimes as if we believe there is. We need brethren and brethren and sisters, men and women, who are willing to say, "I want to do evangelism in another country. I want to be a missionary," and make plans toward that, not just in the language, but in many areas. Joanne and I talked about as we got into the work in Zambia. That when we returned, we hope we would keep the momentum to prepare some written materials. We had good support. There were no financial problems that some have had because my home congregation gave us full support and everything we needed while we were there. It couldn't have been better. Benny and Joanne gave us full support before we got there in preparing us for what we needed to look for and be prepared for. Not all of you have had that who have gone into these fields, but we had good support. But even so, there are culture shocks, there are surprises, there are problems that can't be anticipated. So the best preparation will not keep us from having problems, but at least good preparation can alleviate some of those problems. I think we should prepare written materials. Unfortunately, we didn't carry through with that with other problems after we returned, but I still think it's a good project. Maybe some of us who have been need to get our heads together and prepare some written materials that would be beneficial for those who would make plans to go into the mission field.
You know, I agree, Joe, because if we had had something like that, we would have devoured it before we went, and we didn't have. We had Doug and Debbie's letters, and you know, the mail in Zambia isn't all real reliable, so we answered them, but they never received any of our answers, so we had some of the letters coming to us, but we weren't sure if we were getting our questions answered because of that. So if we had some kind of a printed booklet of some sort to which related past experiences and things that people should look for in going to places like that, we would have definitely been very interested in that. So it's a good idea.
Yeah.